The DeFalco Files is an entertainment-based program. Some memories of certain events might be fuzzy. All opinions are that of the host. Content might not be appropriate for children and some adults. Listener discretion is advised. And remember, the truth is here. Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting presents The DeFalco Files with FSW owner Joe DeFalco and your host, Matt Michaels.
Hey everybody, it's Matt Michaels here, and I am proud to be with the one and only FSW, Future Stars of Wrestling, owner, creator, promoter, commentator, janitorial, occasional, Mr. Joe DeFalco. Joe, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing all right. So far, so good. It's been a very productive week, and we're only on Tuesday.
What's been going on lately?
Well, the first thing was I had a nice meeting yesterday with a well-known producer, director of wrestling, and we're in talks to bring FSW back to television on a weekly one-hour episodic show, a really good time slot on a Saturday night that, you know, we're very happy to want to produce. We think it'll add a little exposure, maybe get us some new sponsors and make more people aware, you know, being that it's a good time slot. So
that's excellent. When you talk about television and time slots, I know you've done TV before. What is the difference in terms of having a decent time slot opposed to the time slot that you've had before, which is well into the
hours? Well, in the past, we were on either 1 in the morning, 2 in the morning, 2:30 a.m. And the one thing we learned was, because, you know, we did surveys, we have our fan pages, we hit up our people, and the majority of them did not watch the show when it was on MyLV TV or the CW, because it was on so late, and most of the times they would DVR it and TiVo it and all that stuff. And it was like, for what the rates we were paying to be on there, it didn't seem to be a financially viable option, because just as many people will go on YouTube, they'll go on, you know, or like now we can go on Twitch, which is more national. But most people don't understand that almost 50% of the residents of Las Vegas don't have cable TV.
Yeah.
So all they have is ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, and locally the CW stuff. So being on there at a good time slot when you're on after a Ring of Honor possibly, or you're on after, you know, Big Bang Theory and all the sitcoms, at that time of the day, you're usually not DVRing stuff. You're usually sitting at home, relaxing, and in most cases, just watching regular TV. Now, of course, there's way more options with the Netflix and the Hulu and the Amazon, because I got it all. But I always find myself watching the news on Channel 5, watching, oh, America's Got Talent's on, even though I can watch it on Hulu if it happens to be on the wall. There are certain programs you just watch. So being able to be there, again, it offers more for the sponsors that are involved with us, like you guys, what we're doing the flyers and with Scott Hosey and, you know, people doing the canvases. Well, now there's an added incentive that if the price is right, well, now you can run a 30-second commercial, or this match is brought to you by the Vegas Bad Boys and things like that, to where it makes it financially feasible, especially when we don't know when we can run full-blown shows to bring income in and having the wrestlers wrestle.
Yeah.
And doing an empty arena show, in all honesty, really will not produce any income because what you might make on a even on a pay-per-view, I'm going to have to bring in our guys that we use for like the Mecca and stuff like that. People aren't going to pay $15-$20 as good as our stuff is to make up for what it would be cost for the production and airing the pay-per-view, because on Fight TV, you know, we only get a third of the pay-per-view price.
Right.
So shows cost thousands of dollars. We're not in a position where we're going to get thousands of buys. But on TV, where, oh, wait, more people are staying home than ever. You know, AEW has proven that people will watch TV, WWE, and locally, you know, we feel we're more popular than, say, Impact or Ring of Honor. Right. You know, we outdraw them live, so why couldn't we outdraw them on TV? So, you know, moving forward, I'll be honest with you. My son put together the meeting, and I'm kind of like, yeah, I don't really see this going anywhere. And I'm like, you know, where we're at and being under an umbrella of somebody else isn't really what FSW is looking to do as we continue to grow.
Right.
But, you know, we were assured that it's, you know, the Future Stars of Wrestling name, it's our belts, it's our champions, it's our crew, and I'm running it just like I would run FSW, and we get to be on TV, and we get some help from somebody who knows the TV business where we really don't. So it's definitely a win for us.
Let me ask you, in terms of when you do have the big shows on Fight TV, who is behind the camera works, the setup and everything? Is that all your guys doing the cameras, or?
Yeah, we do everything live. It's Joey puts together the crew. We got Mikey, we got his buddy Drew. Sometimes the Andy guy from the esports who produces a lot of gaming stuff that goes on through the esports, the Madden tournaments, the that golf one, something T or whatever it is. And he does these major events at the Orleans and Luxors and all over the place. So we've kind of built up a really good crew that fortunately they are wrestling fans.
Yeah.
So if they were money fans, they probably wouldn't be working for Joe because the money isn't there.
Right.
I think with my birthday this past week, I think I got a really good compliment from Brian Cage. And, Brian sent a message. He said, "Happy birthday, DeFalco, to my favorite bargain promoter in the business." And he emphasized it with saying that, you know, he meant it in a very good way.
Yeah.
And knowing Brian, I know he did. But it was always funny because what he would work for somewhere else, I would try to finagle him like, "Hey, I'll pick you up. You know, I'll take you to the protein house before the show," you know, kind of drive him to the gym. So I'd give him these little extra perks that, you know, he would in turn work for me for way less. And he believe me, he would tell me all the time, like, "Hey, bro, you know, I'm working for you for way less, blah, blah, blah. You know, I need a bump." And then I remember the one time he needed the bump was we had just agreed on like a $50 raise. And then he got somehow like a hair match versus Del Rio in Mexico where they were paying him huge money. And it was kind of like he did one show for that price. And then he had to move it up again, like another 100. And I'm like, "Dude, what do you mean?" He's like, "Man, I'm getting way more than I'm getting for you, but I like coming down here. Love Vegas." So, you know, he always gave me a great deal, but I always try to take care of him. Like with the IWF, when we did the shows in Phoenix, he was my main guy. He ended up winning the championship, and he got to pin Drew McIntyre in the four-way elimination match, which was the very last match at the IWF, and Brian Cage was crowned the champion. So,
isn't that wild, too, to think that the Fuck the World champion pinned the WWE I don't even know what if that's the champ. I think that's the champion.
You would think. You know, you just gave me an idea. I should contact Brian and see if he could put me in touch with the Bucks or Cody and say, hey, you want to show some footage? Brian Cage pinning the WWE champion. I was trying to get Impact to buy the footage of Chris Bay pinning Killer Cross because, you know, they had a tumultuous ending at Impact. And, you know, I was trying to get my boy Scott D'Amore to throw some cash our way to have him show Chris Bay. Because I always tell the story, I remember many years ago when The Undertaker first came to WWF. And obviously he was Mean Mark in WCW.
Yeah.
And I remember there would be a match on, and it'd be like, hey, we'll be right back with our main event. And then before they go to the main event, they would have Vader or Sting, and they would show a clip of those guys pinning Mark Callis on the way out for like a month when he was being highlighted in WWF. And it was always those wrestling shots that people would go back and forth and take. And it's like, well, you know, maybe we can, you know, we got good footage, you know, maybe in the archives. Because actually, Tom Howard had told me about how UPW sold tons of footage of theirs, especially because of Cena. And they made a lot of money.
Yep.
And believe me, it wasn't the best quality footage, but it's like when you're putting together, you know, hopefully in 10 years when they're putting together the Killer Cross documentary, they're going to need some early footage of, you know, Kevin wrestling Thatcher and Chris Masters and, you know, all the other guys that, you know, came through WWE, Matt Hardy, whatever it was. So definitely something to keep in mind.
With that, I've never thought about this, but what is your process for keeping the library? Have you guys been like, is it digitized? Have you guys been, you know, keeping it since the beginning?
A lot of it is. Okay. There's some, you know, cleaning out the garage, and I found, you know, 150, 200 mini DV tapes. But most of those DV tapes were placed on hard drives. We probably have 15 hard drives now. Maybe a couple of them got, you know, spoiled.
Right.
Like, if we want stuff, you know, the problem is there's not enough time in the world to put everything. And I tried to tell the kid early on, and of course he didn't listen, like having files, having clips. It's like, hey, we need to film a commercial. Now everybody's got to go through matches and search for a cool move to put in a 30-second commercial.
Yeah.
Where in Czech, I said, hey, have a file on Kevin Cross, and he hits the Saito, and maybe he says something, or Eli Drake, or Brian Cage. And when we want to do a history of FSW, you have 20 Brian Cage clips to choose from, and Matt Hardy, or we're trying to talk about how, you know, all our seminars and all our trainers and for different things. And whether we're trying to do, like now, we need to redo our high impact opener, which is usually a good 45 seconds to a minute.
Right.
Well, the quality of footage is better now, so we probably don't want to use as much of the older stuff, but we're definitely going to want to have a Chris Bay and a Kevin Cross into that mix.
Right.
And mixed in with all the super guys that we have, and the Ice Williams and Remy Marcells and, you know, of course, Kenny and Shogun and Romero and, you know, the who's who of FSW. So, you know, nice to have Sefa Fatu in there since, you know, good chance in the next year or so he'll be on to big, big things. So having those files in archives would have made a lot more sense.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, as big as we try to be, we are a mom and pop company. So there isn't like, hey, Matt, you do video editing. Hey, we'll give you $1,000. Put everything into, you know, put all these clips and do all that. Because believe me, it's going to be a lot of work.
Yeah.
And if you had to hire an outside company to do it, they'd be charging you $5,000 to do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we're not in a position to do that. But now, you know, we can do an empty arena match and start filming for TV tomorrow if we need to. I just go on Facebook and I'll have 20 guys ready to roll.
Yeah.
That have been training or in good shape. And you know, now we got a storyboard and write a month's worth of stuff. But there's storylines that coming out of the Mecca that we can still utilize. Like when Funny Bone jumped Ice Williams after the match at Mecca 6. Well, moving forward into that feud, obviously we're going to use some clips from the Mecca. And we have so much stuff that hasn't really aired yet to the public as we're trying to create storylines and making people care about who we have. We have so much footage to use. It's insane. Because he was like, well, you know, if you want, we can kind of do it together and split the time. I'm like, bro, 58 minutes and 30 seconds. There's going to be 10 minutes of commercials, openers. You know, we got 30, 40 minutes of wrestling.
Yeah,
we could do that five times a week if we had to. So, you know, there's so much out there that we do know that, you know, one of our best fans, George Furman, comes to all the shows. He brings people, sometimes nine, sometimes four. And I remember asking him, and I was like, he moved from the East Coast. And I'm like, how'd you hear about us? He goes, I was turning the channels one day and I saw it on TV and then I decided to come to a show. So it definitely is something that people may notice. We're going to have a guide. You know, the guide will say, hey, maybe Garth Wall's Mazda presents Future Stars of Wrestling. Well, there's value in that to be in the guide and see your name. You know what I mean? So it's like we have hardcore fans that are involved in businesses that, you know, are very willing to support. So I think a TV show is definitely a good option because, you know, in 4 months, 6 months, 8 months, a lot of people might be moving out of Vegas or a lot of people might be moving into Vegas who have no knowledge that there's localized wrestling. So the more we can get out there, especially if it's at an inexpensive price, and it's at an 11 o'clock at night time slot, well, people are awake. We don't have to worry about DVRing it. You know, you turn the channels, you're going to see the guide. Hey, what's on at 11 o'clock? Hey, what's this Future Stars of Wrestling? And then you check it out, and you're like, hey, that looks like the dude that's in NXT. And, oh, that's I watch Impact. That's Chris Bay. He's the Impact champion. You know, so moving forward with that, you know, now that the things have fallen into place, because I was really anti-TV for a long time, it's like, wow, how could we not do this deal?
Yeah. I think you just hit on something, too. Garth Wall, you're going to get big bucks from that man if you did a highlight moment and called it the Got Garth moment of the week. You know Garth would pay for that.
Of course.
With TV, and...
You know, we want you to stay ahead of my guy Lawson. You know, he might be the host of the show. You know, how much is it worth for you to Lawson have to put over the Vegas Bad Boys every week? You know what I'm saying?
I might have to talk to Lawson. We got to get together on something. With TV, and especially with the... plethora of talent that you have that's younger talent, what does it mean for them to continually get an experience, knowing like something, if they're on Twitch, it's going out live, so obviously, you know, if you have any lapses in the match or mistakes or something, it gives you a chance to learn how to do that on the fly for something that's being broadcast. But also with, you know, Fight TV and having that experience and now having potentially a TV show that's weekly, what does that mean to these kids to learn that process of not only where cameras are and how to play on TV, but also maybe a little bit of how to do production?
Well, you know, when we would first film and do stuff, hey, the hard camera's there and we would air it for stuff, but there was a lot of experience when a guy like Chris Bay would go to Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, and everything is based off the TV and not the matches.
Yeah.
While our main focus is always the matches. But being on the TV show, even though it was a smaller show, but knowing exactly how to work, when Chris Bay got called in to work at Ring Warriors, he had already had an understanding of how that worked. And then when he goes to Impact, he totally understands it. While in a lot of cases, you know, guys who go to NXT, for example, they haven't really worked television before, so there's a big learning curve.
Yeah.
Kevin Cross kind of walked into NXT, and it was easy to make him a superstar. You know, Adam Cole, Bobby Fish, Kyle O'Reilly, they had the experience from, you know, Ring of Honor to where they came in. So look at some of the other guys that you see and say, oh, yeah, this guy's pretty good now. But the thing is, he may have been in NXT for 6 months, a year before he got on TV because he had no knowledge how to work it. And basically it slowed down his growth because he had to spend a year learning how to work TV before he actually really worked TV.
Yeah.
So Cross had so much experience between AAA and Impact and FSW and everywhere he went that he was able to walk in, sign a contract, and within a week or two was already on television.
Yeah.
Because he's had that experience and, you know, he spent his whole early part of his career without knowing what he was doing, but putting out great content when it came to promos and character development that that's what got Kevin on television in a matter of no time.
That, I mean, that's phenomenal in terms of the opportunity that's there. Let me ask you about certain people then who will, you know, benefit from this. The first person that comes to mind is the guy who's got all that charisma, and you mentioned him already, Ice Williams. What do you think about Ice and his potential and being able to kind of now learn and play even more with the character and learning, you know, even more about filming and how to translate his charisma through the TV?
Well, by doing that, it's going to get him ahead of another guy who is similarly skilled, who's got good charisma, but he's going to have a little bit more experience. So when a spot is created and it's needed in a bigger company, you know, for a TV spot, like if we do something with, say, Impact, well, being that Ice already knows how to do that, there's a good chance that, you know, he's going to get the spot over somebody else who's equally as talented. Now, if the guy is through the roof, you know, unbelievable, yeah, of course they're going to make a role for him and try to figure it out. But when you're only in the business a few years and you conduct yourself as this true professional that easy to deal with, easy to work with, knows what he's doing, you know, understands, you know, making facials and knows how to cut a promo and knows how to go on time, that's all the stuff he's going to learn in there. Because, you know, when you go out and have an 8-minute match and it ends up being 13 minutes on a regular indie show, you're not really going to be lambasted for it.
Right.
You know, I might yap at you like, bro, what the hell was that? That was way over. You know, on TV, it may cut you out of the segment because they don't want to cut 13 minutes down to 7.
Yeah.
And guess what? You're left on the cutting room floor. So being able to be aware of what's necessary to succeed is the most important thing. Because, you know, if you look NXT, WWE, Ring of Honor, AEW, you know, everything is television based, even especially now when there's no fans.
Right. Right. It's very important now. With some of the guys that you have, I mean, I definitely consider Ice there. Shogun, Where do you see him in terms of his potentiality? What are some of the things that are his strengths, and what are some of the things that might be weaknesses that he can grow and nurture and make those into strengths?
You know, he's got a very good head on his shoulders. He's big, he's explosive, but he's also very agile for a big man. So he's got a lot of the tools, you know, that are necessary to make it in this business. You know, when you're 6'5" in great shape and you can do good things, you know, it's pretty easy to find a spot for a guy like that. Now, I'll be the second or third to say it, because I'm pretty sure Kenny King said it and Shogun and Hammerstone said it, that when those guys won the tag team titles, it wasn't Shogun's best day.
Yeah.
Now, the question becomes, does he harp on it, or does he grow and become better because of it? You know, we've seen him in the past have excellent matches with Hammerstone and Graves, but that was when he was the young kid coming up, and good effort, but a losing effort.
Yeah.
Now he's in a position to be one of the top talents in FSW, but there's also other guys going to be there. And if his performances don't exceed, let's say, a Sefa Fatu, you know, as much as people are friends and Hiro Lu and Shogun, it is also a competition to be the man. You know, people want to be the next FSW heavyweight champion. And major decisions need to be made, and it's going to be made based on what we see. You know what I mean? And from what we saw in the Rumble a couple years ago, and Shogun winning it, and Sefa, you know, Shogun probably got a better spot later on because he's been through our system. He's been training hard. He's been doing stuff. While Sefa is relatively new, but the talent is through the roof.
Right.
So where he may have been behind with Shogun, you know, a year ago or 6 months ago, well, now maybe they're neck and neck. Hey, maybe Sefa's got the edge a little bit, you know. But in the time that we've been gone, unfortunately, you know, there hasn't been tons of training. So I really haven't seen, you know, some of the guys. And if we're going to get things started again, we don't need guys that are rusty for TV.
Yeah.
We need guys, you know, in here training. So, you know, you always got to look over your shoulder. You know, a Hiro Lu's a guy who looked like he had great potential, tore his ACL, disappeared for a year and a half. He came back, and now he's a beast. He, you know, he's a guy that I compare to Shogun when Shogun was a rookie. Like, you saw the potential of this guy being one of our top wrestlers. And now Hiro Lu is in that role. He's not near Shogun yet to challenge at that point, but in a year or so, he definitely could be that guy.
Is that a good feeling to know that there are so many options for you, and hopefully that these guys are seeing the competitive nature and pushing each other essentially to where it just keeps making it hard for you on making the decisions because of the fact that these guys are, you know, showing that they want this?
Well, no doubt about it. You know, it's funny. It's like they're the three heavyweights. You want to talk Sefa, Hiro, and Shogun, you know, and those guys are very close. And, you know, Shogun and Sefa have had a rivalry. They've teamed up together. You know, they'd love to have that one-on-one match, but they'd love to have that one-on-one match be for the FSW Heavyweight Championship.
Yeah.
And, you know, just like when we had Tyshawn and Cross, you know, and we have, you know, then we had Cross and Ricker, Eli Drake, and then we had Hammerstone and those guys. It's like, it's good, you know, the best times in WWF, WWE was, you know, The Rock and Austin were the top two, and then you had Mankind and Triple H.
Yeah.
They were the 1As, while the other guys were the 1s. And, we need that. You know, we got Hammerstone, we got Graves. Well, Graves needs some opponents. You know, let's see Graves and Hero Lou a year after we saw them the first time, when Hero was still very, very inexperienced. You know, he has a lot of growth that he needs to do when it talks about coming in the ring. And, you know, I always talk to Hero about not, you know, he gets the crowd behind him. You know, he's very powerful. He does some big moves, but he seems to allow his opponent to dictate the match more than he should. And in certain situations, like against the Hammerstone or Graves, absolutely. But when we're using younger talent, so you can work your moveset and you can get your confidence, and then all of a sudden he has, you know, barely a 60-40 match with a guy who's had five matches and struggles to beat him, that doesn't make the fans perceive you as that top guy. It's like they want to get behind him, but he also needs to go out there and demolish somebody. You know, show the killer instinct, you know, because, you know, Graves and Hammerstone have it. You know, we need people to believe that Hero Lou can challenge Graves for the title and beat him. That's what makes people want to come to shows. They want to see a storyline built to where they believe that one person can beat the other.
Do you think sometimes, and I think I've, you know, I've heard this in certain terms, but that guys like that who are developing into that next level, that they got to remember to work bigger, not, you know, not over the top, you know, with, you know, looking big, but feeling bigger. Feeling like you know, are at that, you know, that matchup. Because, like, Graves is a huge dude. If someone like Hero, who is a big guy, is giving too much, he does look like he's smaller. He looks weaker. Is that kind of a key where you see even guys like Damian Drake and Matt Vandegrift, when I watch them work, They look bigger. They look more pronounced. Is that something about mentality going into the ring that, you know, helps people elevate themselves to the next level?
Well, for a smaller guy, it's all about being confident. And early on, Damian Drake was content. You know, he was a tag guy with Spider, and then he became a No Limits guy. But he proved himself when he went one-on-one with Hammerstone, and, you know, even posted about it on Twitter. We had the match up on the YouTube or whatever, you know, and both talked about how it was one of their favorite matches. You know, Hammerstone, who's wrestled some great people, you know, puts that up as one of his favorite matches of last year. Yeah. Was him and Damian Drake. The reason Chris Bay exploded on the scene was because of his confidence. He didn't care how big you were. You know, he was going out there and he was fighting you if you were 240 or 140. It didn't matter to Chris. There was no intimidation.
Right.
And that's the thing. You know, when you're smaller and you're going up against a bigger guy, you know, it's easier to, you know, give in to what the other guy is trying to do, because maybe he's higher up on the card. Maybe he's, you know, one of the top guys. But in most cases, everybody wants to be the top guy.
Yeah.
So even if you're facing a Brian Cage and you're, let's say, a Brandon G, for example. Well, nobody in the world thinks that Brandon G is going to beat Brian Cage. But Brandon G needs to go in there and make sure at the end of the day, Brian Cage remembers who he is.
Yeah.
If Brian Cage can remember who he is, that means this guy did a really good job doing something that maybe we need to keep our eyes out and, you know, see what's going on. Because, you know, certain guys can wrestle really well, and some guys, you know, have really good charisma, and some guys are really good on the mic. But there's not many guys who are really good on the mic, who have really good charisma, that are really good shape, that can really work well.
Yeah.
And, you know, coming here to train, you have the ability to do all that. It's easy to practice cutting promos. You can do it in front of your mirror. You can do it in your bed. You can do it while you're, you know, half asleep, putting yourself to sleep because the promos suck. You know, there's a lot of different things you can do.
So with the Unguided, you got Matt and Damian. They're trying this. They're really in this. You know, we've talked about how they get in and they train a lot, which is incredibly promising. But something else that I think is spectacular is that they've taken this time during the pandemic to work on their characters through videos and through, you know, photographs, and just developing the image and characters. Is that something that, A, you've been behind, and B, do you see anyone else kind of doing that right now, or are they just kind of taking their own lead and trying to, you know, make their own name on their own?
Well, there's no doubt that they are in the forefront. Obviously, you know, Lacey isn't cutting a lot of promos, but she's putting out a lot of content.
Right.
Now, a lot of guys, in all honesty, really aren't, you know. And, you know, recently we've seen, without wrestling for 4 months, the Unguided have already set up a program. They've set up a rivalry with the tag team champions because they've shown that's what they want.
Yeah.
And moving forward, you know, with everything being out, it's hard to just put together a story and our very first show. Well, we can do the Unguided against Kenny and Shogun immediately because of the content that they have put out on all over social media. And it's also given them the ability to practice it. So if we were doing wrestling shows, they would have had 4 months is 8 to 10 FSW shows.
Yeah.
They would have had 10 more shows under their belt to build something up. While in most cases, there's a lot of guys who haven't put out anything, and some haven't even really trained much. So it's almost like restarting everything.
Right.
So anybody who's taken advantage of it, and there's numerous people that we see there, you know, on a more frequent basis. Even Sky High has gotten some stuff out there with Mondo Rocks doing his global promo battle, taking out Rocky T, the controversial victory, you know, and, you know, now there's a little beef going on between Leon Hader and Mondo Rocks, and whether that leads to something in the ring, it would probably make sense to do so.
Yeah. Also, too, with that type of work being done, and now, like, you know, 3 weeks ago even, 4 weeks ago, 2 months ago, there wasn't a potential of TV on the plate. Now you got guys who are doing stuff that kind of is putting them a little bit ahead, because they're already essentially working on stuff that could be easily translated for you into a TV program.
Well, what makes it pretty easy is the first week of television. Even if the Unguided weren't in a match, there's enough promos to put it out there so people can see who they are.
Yeah.
You know, because as important as the content is, there needs to be a lot of time to produce it. Now, we may find out we need to produce this and get the first show up in 3 weeks. Well, it's going to be hard to get shit tons of promos and everything ready to get a show. So when there's stuff already in the can that we can use, you know, clips, like I said, of Ice Williams and Funny Bone, where Funny Bone's going after Ice Williams. Well, he laid him out at the Mecca. Of course we're going to use that footage. So anybody who's done stuff have a better chance of also getting on TV sooner, because we're going to have to work in other people. And right now, if there's no storyline going on, well, now we got to create that storyline. Well, that takes a little bit of time. So the pre-existing ones, well, you know, the Nevada State Championship, for example, is now vacant.
Right.
Well, it seemed like Remy Marcel and Jarrell Nelson were kind of juggling for that opportunity to have that title match. Well, it's possible that we go directly into it and not have another tournament, blah, 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 you know, and we end up moving forward with that. You know, they had a match and, you know, Jarrell dropped Remy on his head.
Yeah.
You know, and almost broke his neck, you know. So there's definitely a feud that is brewing right there because of circumstances beyond our control.
Yeah.
You know. So the first couple of weeks of TV, we're going to have to move forward with stuff. You know, of course, you know, right now our heavyweight champion doesn't have anybody.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, who he's feuding with. You know, he won the belt. He beat Chris Bay. Chris Bay went on to become the X Division champion. So us having him is not going to be as frequently as we did in the first.
Yeah. When you look at people like you just mentioned, Mondo, guys like Mondo and Robbie, the Suavecitos, how do you feel about how they started and where they've come to so far and where the potential goes for those guys?
It's all based on work ethic, you know. The Suavecitos, they're very young. They're talented. They got, you know, some good, you know, martial arts background and stuff. But Danny is one of the cockiest young kids I have probably ever met. And, you know, we're working on doing something, and it's like, yeah, we're going to steal the show and this. And then all of a sudden, you know, they have the match, and it was pretty clunky. And it almost brings them down to earth, only for that moment, of course. But it's like, bro, you know, talk is great. Actions speak louder than words. You know, I know you can do some really good stuff, but you're going to make mistakes, and you're going to make mistakes a lot. You know, you've probably had less than 20 matches under your belt.
Yeah.
And you know, it's good to be eager, you know, it's good to feel, because no great wrestler is great without having a bit of an ego.
Yeah.
But you also have to, you also need to be humble, and you also need to understand that when you're very, very young, that things take time. Yep. And you know, sometimes these guys want to, you know, jump the shark a little bit, and they think that, you know, they're going to be superstars. Like, you know, I had to break it down to them. I'm like, hey, there's a top tier of tag teams in FSW, and that's the Bonus Boys, and that's the Unguided, and that's Death Proof.
Yeah.
And it's also Shogun and Kenny and Hammerstone and Graves if they want to be. And, you know, the 1% if we end up bringing back Royce Isaacs.
Yeah.
You know, with a lot not going on, you know, opportunities are able to be had. So right underneath them, I wouldn't call them the B-list, would be Sky High. They're kind of like above the really young teams like the Suavecitos and Hyperquick and Laz and Adriel.
Yeah.
And those guys are the B team, or the B guys that are trying to get to the A level. And then you have the Sky High, who's probably the B plus.
Yeah.
You know, to where they got to protect their spot to stay ahead of guys like the Suavecitos and Laz and Adriel, or they fall by the wayside. So again, we're talking about the competition. Well, you know, nobody's going to tell the Bonus Boys that Death Proof or the Unguided are better than them, and nobody's going to tell Death Proof or the Unguided the same thing.
And is it something that is, I guess, exciting to you? I guess it kind of excites me to think that those younger guys get to potentially work with these guys who are established. I mean, you work the Bonus Boys. If you look like shit, you got to reconsider what you're doing out there, because they can make you look so good.
Last year that happened. Sky High was kind of on a roll, beating the undercard teams, and then we felt that they were ready, and they wrestled, I believe, at Beers and Body Slams against the Bonus Boys, and they shit the bed. No other way to say it. They had a miserable performance. You know, the Bonus Boys were like, ugh, you know, that wasn't very good. But then they hit the training. It was a kind of a wake-up call, because when you're young and you're having some success, it's easy to believe that you're there when you're really not. Right. And then when they had another opportunity, you know, they hit a home run and they put themselves in line to be like, hey, this is definitely a team to be reckoned with. You know, Robbie had gotten hurt. Mondo did some good stuff on his own. Yeah. And then when they came back together, they really started gelling. And, you know, and all you can say is that it was because of their hard work. And, you know, they didn't want to be, or they don't want to be, just another team in FSW. They want to be the best team. And if you're the best team in FSW, people are going to definitely take notice. You know, we have another team that I'm huge, 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 huge fans of. Tito Escondido and Che Cabrera.
Yeah.
They've had a few different names in their tenure. But the last time we saw them was at the anniversary show, and they beat the 1%. So... Yeah. There's not a lot of people who can say they beat the 1%. So they're a team that jumps quickly to the A-list. But because of the fact that there's no shows, you know, we're talking with them. And the strong survive. You know, if you're the fifth or sixth best team in FSW, you're not going to get a lot of casino show time. Because maybe there's two matches, maybe there's a third, or maybe there's a four-way. But in most cases, you know, a team like the Suavecitos, they may get a little upset that they're not on the show and Lights, Camera, Faction, because, you know, like the No Escape, Hammerstone and Graves wrestled, and Shogun and Kenny wrestled, and the Unguided wrestled. And the Bonus Boys wrestled Death Proof in a steel cage.
Yeah.
So there wasn't really a lot left for anybody else when you're doing an 8 or 9 match card. So we have built up, and we've always had a fantastic No Limits division. But now our tag division, which, again, was depleted when a few years ago that all our teams were either in the middle of breaking up or they were going to China to work on the relationship with the OWE.
Right.
So it forced us to create some tag teams, which we did. And out of that became the 1%, who went on to be one of the top tag teams on the West Coast.
Yeah.
And they were one of the top independent teams for that year. You know, wrestling, you know, they had a great match against the Rascals here in FSW. They wrestled Kazarian and Daniels, or Scorpio Sky, whichever one of the combination of three, you know, the best of the West, you know, good guy Mike Rain runs, you know, put the belts on them. At Defy, they were the champions, which is a highly regarded company out of Seattle.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, I'll take all the credit in the world. They'll give me all the credit in the world for putting them together, Royce and Jarrell. But it was Royce and Jarrell who made themselves as good a tag team as they were. I just felt that they could have good chemistry. And I felt that about a bunch of teams who didn't give a shit, didn't want to work together, didn't want to be in a tag team. So they were the shits and they had to be broken up. Well, Royce and Jarrell embraced it and started making a lot of money compared to what they would on a normal indie show. And then Royce signed with the NWA.
Yeah.
So, you know, where did they see Royce? Well, most of the time over the last couple of years, he's been in a tag team with Jarrell. So it wasn't like they were like all over his singles work, because he was working as a tag everywhere.
Right.
So, you know, it's taking advantage of those situations. Now it's up to the lights, camera, factions, the Suavecitos, the Laz and Adriels, who have really good potential, to now break that ceiling, as they say, and do what it takes to be one of the top players.
You know, speaking of divisions, I know that we definitely have put it out there that Lacey is one of the, I mean, just one of the top athletes around, let alone professional wrestlers. What is going on with the women's division? Are there some women that we're not seeing yet that you kind of have an eye that are kind of developing? And do you think that, let's say, either the kids in the kids' classes or the kids who come and see the live performances of someone like a Lacey will hopefully inspire them to go ahead and grab their dreams? And maybe it's not right now, but maybe, you know, 5, 6, 7 years down the line, those young women who watch Lacey will be your future women's division.
Well, in all honesty, back in the day, we had very few girls training in the kids' class. You know, the girl would come with her brother, the brother would train, the girl would sit and watch and get ready to go to her cheerleading practice. But because of the success that WWE created with the Charlotte Flairs and Sasha Banks and Bayley's and all this other stuff, and the TV show, you know, and Natalya and all these others, that really is what sparked, you know, the idea of girls getting involved in training.
Yeah.
You know, so we would go from, you know, one or two scattered to 5 or 6, you know, and, you know, Sandra Moon was the first. She came with her brother at 15, I'd say, and they trained in the kids' class. And I never really thought of the idea. You know, Spider started at 14, and then we used to let him, you know, train in the regular classes here and there. And then he kind of got to be 17, and then we kind of let him train regularly.
Yeah.
Well, the same thing happened with Vinny, who goes by VIP, and Laz, and Cassandra. They were really the first batch that I wasn't really thinking like, hey, you know, can't wait to get these guys in the regular classes, because, you know, a lot of them are doing it for fun and this, and maybe don't want to pursue it as a career.
Yeah.
You know, but they did. And, you know, Sandra Moon is, you know, one of the top girls that we have. Women, girls, whatever's politically correct, I guess. You know, but she is a young woman, you know. She's young.
Yeah.
And you got Maserati, who was mainly a valet, who was training, and to be honest, she wasn't very good at wrestling. And she became okay. She went to China with Bugatti, and when she came back, she seemed to learn an awful lot. And, you know, she became, you know, pretty good.
Yeah.
And then we used a Heather Monroe, and we used a couple of the out-of-state girls, mainly because we didn't really have enough here.
Right.
But now we have, you know, Alita, who is the valet for Sky High, and she gets involved in matches, but she's still got a ways to go. And Queen Estrella, who is kind of a bodyguard type for Maserati.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's making progress. And there's a lot of potential there. And she comes and she does train, and she's trying to get better. But she's very young. And then we got a handful that are training regularly, you know, since we reopened in June. You know, there's... You know, there's one younger girl from kids' class, Dana Lynn, who's 16, almost 17, and she's been in the kids class for a couple years. So she comes by and she's part of the beginners class. And, you know, she's actually had a couple of matches when we focused on the what we call the juniors division of FSW, which features all the kids from the kids class. And we give them opportunities. And they probably had the most attended school show that we had last year when we did a show basically just for them, mixed in with some of the talent. And, you know, they take it very, very seriously. And Leon Hader is phenomenal as the kids class coach. Like when he left for a while, we used guys like Chris Bay and Damian Drake, and the kids loved them. They loved those guys.
Yeah.
But with Leon Hader, the parents loved him. You know, because he was, you know, Chris, Damian Drake, they're young wrestlers. They want to go out there. They want to have fun, you know, do cool things. Well, Hader's way more disciplined. So, you know, he's a home run with the parents.
Yeah.
When it comes to that, you know, they know they can trust him. They know he's going to keep them safe. You know, they know that he has their best interests. Not that the others don't, but he's formatted things to where, you know, within 2 or 3 weeks of Leon Hader coming back, 6 or 8 students who kind of dropped off came back because the parents really encouraged them to come back because Leon was there.
Yeah. Wow. That's, I mean, it's remarkable to think that there's so much involvement where the parents, you know, trust what's going on. Do you see in those classes the same spirited rivalry that parents will have when they are, let's say, at a Little League game or at a soccer game for their kids?
Oh, there's definitely some that we call beauty pageant moms, and some are beauty pageant dads. You know what I mean? It's like, it's really crazy. They get really, like, they're living vicariously through their kids.
Yeah.
You know, because sometimes the parents are the huge wrestling fan.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe that's a way that him and the son have bonded. You know, some of the kids are very, you know, very quiet, don't talk a lot. And, you know, looking back with Cassandra and Laz, who obviously are brother and sister, so they hang out, and Vinny. But you can add 5, 6, 7 former kids class students who have come to watch their matches, even though they're not involved in the wrestling anymore, because they've stayed friends, they've become friends, they go out, they hang out, and it's, you know, it's crazy, the giant camaraderie. It's like the fans, you know, they all, you know, 20 of them will go to Firehouse Subs beforehand to support our sponsor, who Brandon is like now buddies with Garth, our other sponsor. And it's just like, it's like a giant family of a tight-knit family. Because, again, we have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people that come to the casino shows. But we have those, you know, 75 to 100 hardcore fans that almost come to everything we do. It's like, if we had karaoke night at the FSW Arena, I guarantee you George and the Chief and a lot of our regulars would just show up anyway.
Well, you know, you just said...
Hell, they go to your place.
Yeah.
How many of our fans, you know, you have no fans if it wasn't for our fans that would go to your place at the Boulder Station.
Exactly. There's no doubt. You just said exactly. The coolest thing is the passion about local wrestling and national wrestling for that, you know, for that much too. They just love it. But you also said a key word here, and that's karaoke. Let me really quick, as we might, you know,
don't sing for us.
No. But as we're starting to wrap up here, you did say something in the beginning. It was your birthday the other day. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
And you do share a birthday with the songbird of wrestling, Mr. Ricky Tenacious. What have you seen in Ricky's growth over the years?
I'll tell you a little story about Ricky. Many years ago, at the old Boulder Highway School, so that would have to be anywhere between 2009 and 2011, I remember Ricky's dad, Benny. Benny had worked for GLOW back in the day, okay? And he was a referee or something like that. Well, Benny had a backyard ring. So he had a ring in his backyard. And I'm pretty sure the day he brought Ricky down, he was probably 14 or 15. And he was able to do, you know, all the bumps, all the other stuff. That was when kids' class was pretty lame. There'd be two or three kids there. That would be about it, you know. And I don't think they came more than a couple times. Even Ricky's sister, she might have been like 10, 11, or 12 at the time. And she was doing these crazy bumps that were like, holy shit. And the thing was, after the fact, Ricky had his little company. So we didn't really mix and mesh too much just because of the fact that, hey, you know, right, wrong, or indifferent, this is FSW's town. Right. So I'm not the most excited when these other companies, you know, come in, despite the fact that a lot of our guys obviously go wrestle there and they need the experience and they do the stuff. I don't love the idea, but I never discourage it because young guys need to get better by working matches. And if I have a casino show and you're not good enough to be on there yet, how do you get good enough if I can't put you on a show?
Yeah.
Well, if you're able to go somewhere, you know, I prefer you go to Arizona or California, but it's hard when you're a young kid who's got 8 or 9 months in and you're one of 100 guys trying to get booked in some company to go work for $20 in California.
Right.
So having it here is good and bad at the same time. And like I said, you know, when people have talked about the other companies in town, you know, about competition, there is no competition. Our competition is everything that's going on in the Strip, everything that's going on in Vegas. We can only worry about ourselves. When somebody else kind of took our guys and kind of started their own company, didn't last very long either. The bottom line was their shows weren't bad. They brought in Tommy Dreamer to work Funny Bone, you know, Lance Hoyt, you know, because he met him at our show and then plucked him to go there. And it's about, in the wrestling business, it's very hard on the independent level to make money.
Yeah.
So when there's a guy who people call a mark who is going to overpay you just to put you on a show, you're obviously going to take advantage of it. Now, these younger guys, they aren't taking advantage of anybody because they don't really have any matches. So they, you know, if they are making a few dollars, great. So getting back to Ricky, I guess he ended up starting training a little with us here and there. We kind of utilized him when we needed to. And Ricky training here compared to where he is, all I can say is he's training with better people, which makes Ricky better.
Yeah.
When Ricky is at a training place and he's the best guy there, it's hard for him to get better because he's trying to show – he, who doesn't already have a lot of experience, is trying to show these younger kids, you know, what to do and what's the proper way. While when he comes to our classes, you know, he's a little more advanced. So, yeah, he's doing the regular bullshit rolls and all the other stuff that the beginners need to learn. Ricky already knows that, but Ricky's getting practice matches in. Right. And he's now rolling around with Cody and Remy and Ice and all the and Chris Bay. And he's getting better because he's training with really good people. And regardless of anything, or anybody could say whatever they want, besides having the best trainers, the best talent in Vegas is here.
Right.
So how do you get better? By working better people. So when you don't have a match, or, you know, Ricky's not in a position that, hey, Ricky, I brought in Chris Masters and you're going to get him. But working a Remy Marcel or working a Chris Bay, is going to make Ricky better. And now he's also getting critiqued by the Kenny Kings and the Sin Bodies and the Tom Howards, to where he only has to focus, when he comes here, he only has to focus on himself.
Yeah.
While he's over there, he's got to focus on everybody else. So I'm pretty sure he doesn't really do a lot of training over there. He's actually trying to help train those guys to hopefully become competent.
Right. Another follow-up on that. Have you ever thought about potentially, or has he worked with Disco in any way? Because it seems like Ricky has that same natural ability to get heat that Disco does.
No, that is an interesting subject right there. In the past, we did some stuff when Remy with the Fro, he did something with Disco, but I just remember the match was like the shits. But character-wise, it kind of played into it, because we would do commentary all the time, and basically, you know, he'd come out in a suit, Remy, and Disco would just continually bash Remy Marcel as a Disco Inferno wannabe. So, you know, we definitely had some play in that. With Disco kind of being not around nearly as much, and he hasn't been around in a while, but we have talked about, you know, reincorporating, you know, Disco into the mix, because he is so knowledgeable about professional wrestling. You know, having Disco around is just, you know, another feather in the cap to what we're doing. You know, like we're talking about doing, you know, a TV show. So we're talking about our guy Lawson. We're talking about Sally being a host. Well, I'm also talking about guys like the Godfather, Disco Inferno. You know what I mean? It's like these guys are local, and Disco is more about, he's never about the money. You know, he makes far more money doing his other gigs than he would training a class, but he enjoyed doing that. So,
yeah, it's
so it's definitely a possibility. You know, the question becomes, hey, next week the governor is supposedly going to let businesses do their thing, is what he made it seem like. If you follow the rules, which we've talked about, you know, masks in, masks out, social distancing, you know, hopefully you wear a mask and, you know, we do the shows. You know, that's something, even if it's at a lower amount, you know, I'd rather hear 50% capacity than 50 people, because we can really fit about 180 to 200. Well, you know, it also can be profitable to do a show with 100 people.
Right.
And, you know, I know guys like Hammerstone, you know, I read his Twitter every day. You know, he's itching to get back. We were looking to do some stuff in June and early July. And, hey, you available? He's like, yeah, I'll be out. And these guys want to work, man. They're wrestlers. That's what they want to do, you know.
Yeah.
You're not a wrestler when you just go to training and you do a practice match.
Right.
You know what I mean? Nobody considers you, you know, a wrestler. You know, I've seen Kenny King more with the pandemic than I ever did at training.
Well, you know, I guess all you have to really do is, if you opened up a restaurant inside of the the school.
Yes, it could be like a live theater. You could see, because that's what it is.
Yeah.
Because I remember we were talking about some stuff, and Rocky showed me something from the governor, and it was like, no MMA fighting, no wrestling. And it's like, I believe they're talking about amateur wrestling, because that's all mandated by the athletic commission.
Right.
While we're considered choreographed entertainment, ballet, theater, you know, it's something totally different.
So let's kind of do a wrap up here. With everything that has taken place this last week and shows a lot of promise coming up, what is your main goal in, let's say, the next, you know, 2, 3, 4 weeks? If everything is a go and you're allowed to open, what should the fans kind of look forward to in terms of how you're thinking about starting back up?
Well, I think initially, for sure, we're going to have a streamlined version. you know, in the past, Joe DeFalco was known to have 9 matches, 10 matches, maybe a pre-show match, which included maybe an 8-man tag or a 6-man scramble. You know, right now we're trying to concentrate on producing the best show. Yeah. And you can't produce the best show by putting 35 people on it. And, you know, people want to come out. They want to have a good time. And I want to run some damn good fucking shows. And it's like, you know, if you're not training, and you haven't been training for 3 or 4 months, and we have a show next week, I can't really put you on it.
Yeah.
You know, regardless of who you are, you know, it doesn't matter at that point. You know, you have to be ready to go. You have to show, hey, you know what? I miss this fucking so bad that I need to be around at least during training.
Yeah.
To work on my craft. It's like the unguided Lacey Ryan. I swear to God, I thought Lacey Ryan moved in to the FSW training facility, because every time I would walk in, she'd be here every single time. Like, did you like put a cot under the ring or something? You know, because she's always here.
Yeah.
And working on stuff, doing things, you know, putting out video content, making people remember who you are. Yeah. We got a lot of talented guys that I have not seen one time. Okay, and I get you, you know, from all of March to all of April till most of May, we didn't have any training whatsoever. You know, a couple people had keys and snuck in here and there to train with another person, no big deal. But it wasn't until the end of May, early June, that we actually really did stuff. So from, say, June 1st, when we officially reopened, to the end of July, you know, there's a good amount of guys on our roster that I can count on one hand how many times they've been here. So if it's not that serious to you, well, then it's not that serious to me. I take this fucking serious. It's like, you know, we still had to pay bills when we were closed for 3 months. As I say, knock on wood, the landlords gave us a good deal, but they didn't give us a free deal.
Yeah.
You know, they gave us a really good discount, but we still had to pay our power bill and our internet bill and a lot of other bills. So, you know, we were scrambling. You know, we're trying to get things done. We're trying to come up with ideas to get things started. Hey, how do we do this? How do we do that? You know, the mind was always thinking wrestling. You know, and what we're going to do. And if you're saying you want to be a wrestler and 90% of your thoughts weren't about wrestling, well, then I don't know how good you could become if you don't take it serious enough to begin with.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And I think the other thing, too, is that you hope that those, you know, people who are really serious about it, at least were continuing to physically work on themselves, keep themselves.
Chris Bay, you know, another guy, like, hey, is it cool if I come by the school? You know, and he might roll around with an Ice Williams, or, you know, I think when we did the thing, he was probably at the school with Ice.
Yeah.
You know, and Shogun a little bit, and maybe Nino Black. But, you know, he wanted to get down here. You know, he was getting on a plane to wrestle Willie Mack at the Slammiversary, and the day before he was, you know, right here, and the day before that, he was like he is right here today. He's coaching the kids' class camp.
Yeah.
You know, they all wear their masks. There's a small amount of kids there, and the parents are eager to have their kids working out and maybe get a break from their kids. I don't know.
Well, on that note, we're going to wrap up for this week. Joe, any final words for the listeners?
You know, I made the post today on Facebook. We're hoping before next Tuesday, because if not, if it doesn't happen till then I guess we would make the announcement of what's going to happen, when we're going to start, but hopefully before then. I also got some really good news yesterday that a former FSW superstar, a guy who has been a champion in our company, has become available again. So I talked to him last week He was involved where he couldn't work, really work for us anymore, and now he's available. So I'm very excited that he might be back. So there's the giveaway. It's a he.
Whew. Well, surprise and intrigue, and that's the best way to leave them wanting more. Thanks again, Joe, for this week's edition of the DeFalco Files. And everyone, please subscribe, download, and listen. This is the number one program under the Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting banner. So we thank you for all your support. And until next week, take care, everyone.